I don't know how these orders were, you know, we may have flipped a coin in the office, I don't know. But Roy Lee, we've got you first, my friend.
Well, it really is an honor and a privilege to be here today and talk just a little bit about State Question 777 and try to share with you what we believe is the importance of this question and what it means for agriculture in Oklahoma and how we need your help to ensure that it passes in November of 2016. Scott Biggs can tell us far better than I can of the origins of the question and what prompted him to do that, and we'll ask Scott to do that in just a few minutes, I think, because I think it is relevant. But at the end of the day, how many of you believe that today you have a constitutional right to farming and ranching in the state of Oklahoma? Well, the simple fact is you do not have a constitutional right to farming and ranching in the state of Oklahoma today. We have constitutional rights for hunting and fishing. We have constitutional rights for rodeos and livestock shows. We have all kinds of rights that are guaranteed to us in the Constitution, but we don't have one for farming and ranching. And when we start thinking about whether or not we ought to protect farming and ranching, should we give any segment of industry the kind of protection that comes with constitutional protection? Some have asked us, why don't we give the same protection to oil and gas, or why don't we give it to other industries in the state? And I got to give credit to Secretary of Agriculture Jim Reese for kind of bringing this thought to my mind, and I think it's very relevant. Name me another industry that is essential for life. I can live without a doctor. I can live without oil and gas. I may not like it, but I can do it. I can live without technology even to some extent. Again, I may not like it very much. But if I don't have food to eat, I'm not going to live very long. And so when you think about things that are essential for life, to me, those are the kinds of things we ought to be protecting. And State Question 777 is going to protect our right to continue to feed Oklahoma and continue to help feed the populace of the United States and the rest of the world. There's the breadth of this question is great, and there's a lot to share. You've got folks up here that know as much or more about it than I do. And so I'm going to stop right here and let Michael share his thoughts and comments a minute, and then we'll come back. I hope we have a minute, Terry, to answer some questions,
yes,
maybe from the crowd, because I think that's where we really get to what you want to know. But we've been working for some time on this steering committee, and Michael, maybe that's a place for you to start, is who all's involved and how are we involved?
You bet, and I would echo what Roy Lee said when he began. It is indeed an honor to be here. And share some thoughts with you about this very important question. And I look out here and I see a lot of family friends and both young and old in terms of how long I've known you. One gentleman remarked, I remembered you when you were in diapers, and I'd appreciate if he'd keep his thoughts to himself. But it is an honor to be in front of you and to share some thoughts with you. And the origin of this, or the reason for this, is to preserve the future for our future, to do this long term, long after we're gone, to continue in a lifestyle that we honor and we believe to be credible and full of integrity and worthy. And that being said, as Roy Lee mentioned on the steering committee, or the organizationally, if you will, all organizations, credible organizations in agriculture organizations in Oklahoma, are firmly in support of 777. I don't know of one, and of any of the, again, credible agricultural organizations that are not supportive of this state question. I say that to say we're all unified. We're all working on this together. Now, we all bring our individual strengths, if you will. I bring a black hat to the steering committee, and I wear that with pride. And I get some ribbing for that, but that's okay. But we all bring what we're able to bring, and I think it's great to have guys like RJ at the table, who's going to talk a little bit about the business perspective. You know, our members are out in the countryside every day before most of them, and many of you are cattlemen. But before you take care of yourself, you probably take care of your cattle. And make sure they're taken care of. And that's just what we do. And so to see an agribusiness perspective, I think, is very valuable for us to have that as well. And so I share that to say we're all involved, we're all unified, we're all behind this, and it's all very important that we pass it. you're going to hear a lot of things, and maybe perhaps you already have, a lot of accusations, a lot of discredit towards what we do in agriculture. Was most disenchanted when the folks that oppose us, and notice we say that, us, rolled out their campaign. They gave no credit to what you do on a daily basis. They gave no credit to how you have labored. Many of you, you've inherited a business from maybe some of your grandfathers, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, and you intend to pass it on to your great to your grandchildren and great grandchildren. And they gave no credit to the what you've done to feed the world. And you've done that, and you continue to do that, and rise to the challenge amidst droughts and insect infestations and challenging regulations from our own government, as well as world society type government. I mean, just all these types of challenges. You've risen to the occasion to continue to produce safe, wholesome, and very affordable food. And you do that on a daily basis. And it really kind of irks me, if you will, that our opposition won't even recognize that. But they don't. And so you're going to hear some things from organizations like the HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, and Representative Biggs, I'm sure, is going to address them a lot more, because they've been insulting personally towards him, which we find insulting as well. But and you're going to hear ideas that they have that are called the three R's. Did you know that the HSUS has an idea called the three R's? And their three R's, you can look on their website and you can find it, and it's their motive is that you need to refine the type of animal protein that you consume. That's the first step. So in other words, instead of eating regular beef, you ought to eat grass-fed beef, or beef that's produced humanely. I would argue, really, all beef is produced humanely, but they wouldn't, obviously. So you need to refine the type of beef you eat. And then once you do that, the next step you need to take is you need to reduce the amount of beef you eat. So refine it and then reduce. Eat a little less.
Replace it with pork.
And then replace it with pork.
Some of you didn't hear that comment. Roley says replace it with pork.
Thanks, Terry. You didn't have to. But then the final R, and in all seriousness, is replace, but replace it with plant protein. So you can see the progressive step that they have. They want you to refine, then reduce, then replace. Well, for us as beef producers, us as pork producers, there's no room at the end of that progression for us on the table. And so that's the type of agenda that we're up against. And let's be very clear. They have a very aggressive, very well-funded agenda to do so, and we need to rise to the occasion to defend what we do, why we do it, and our goals as far as to provide safe and affordable food, but also to pass our businesses, our livelihoods, on to our children and grandchildren. So I appreciate you being here. I appreciate the opportunity to share this with you, and I'm going to pass it over to RJ and let him embolden us as well.
Well, emboldening is probably not the word I would use personally. These two are experts. Obviously, I'm a lot younger than by about 40 years.
Watch out now.
Got to get a little ribbon in. From our perspective, again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk to you. And I know I'm representing the agribusiness sector with ag co-ops. You guys know you own us. And so if you're not profitable, we're not profitable. If you can't employ technology, we can't employ technology. And to us, State Question 777, the passage of it is about you guys being able to utilize technology to be more profitable, to grow more food for the impending folks that are starving in the world and the growth in the population. You know, every industry in the world is allowed to make technological advances. And our question is, why not agriculture? And so with that, I think Michael and Roy Lee pretty well covered everything very well, so I think it'd be better just to kind of get to the questions. So
we would take questions. While you're thinking of one and getting up the nerve to come, I've got one. Michael, you just said we need to rise to the occasion. How do we rise to the occasion?
Well, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that, Terry. There's several different ways that we need to, as agriculturists and agricultural community, to rise to the occasion, if you will. First and foremost, grab a bumper sticker, grab two or three, and use them. Now, put them on the feed truck. I mean, that's pretty cool as far as I'm concerned, but cows can't vote. We continue, Tommy, to push that legislation every year, and we're not getting very far, but cows can't vote. So put the bumper sticker on her church car, okay, and go to church with it, and go to town, and that just gives us an opportunity to advertise. So that's one easy step. But also you need to educate yourself about some of the talking points, because there will be opportunity for you to, even in a small rural community, you may think everybody around me is just like me. It's amazing how many people out in the countryside have not learned completely what 777 is, as well as how susceptible they are to some of the false advertising. And so you need to be able to give some basic talking points regarding 777. And we've got all those. AFR has those, a great little table display out here. And there's other ways too, but here's the final way. And this one is the one that we none of us like. And boy, we wish we didn't have to do it this way. But unfortunately, we have to. And that is, we need to raise money. We've established a steering committee, Roy Lee and RJ, the Oklahoma Farmers Care. We need dollars in order to advertise for folks to go to vote yes, to when they go to the polls, to feel confident about voting yes. And let's be clear, there's going to be a messy ballot this November. It's going to be flooded. You're probably going to have to turn over a couple of different pages, no matter what precinct you're in, just to get to the state questions. And when you get to the state question list, you're liable to have who knows how many by then, but we've got, we may have 10 or 12 state questions. That scares me a little bit, because when you start getting that many, a lot of people sometimes will just say, I can't keep up with all these, no, all the way down, and that scares me. So we've really got to distinguish ourselves and make sure people understand. I may not like this one, but this one is important to the livelihood of our state and to my food supply, and I need to vote yes on 777. So we need dollars. So I don't know how you figure out what this is worth to your operation. I've had some folks suggest, you know, this is worth every bit of $1 or $2 or $3 a cow for me. And so I'm going to write a check for that amount. It's worth a monetary unit to per acre. How many grandkids do you have? What do you want them? Do you want them to be able to be secured in agriculture? What's that worth to you? You have five of them. Is it worth $100 a piece? Is it worth $5 a piece? I don't know. That's whatever that amount is important to you. We ask that you write that check. And let me assure you, no check is obviously too large, and no check is too small. No check is too small. We need every dollar we can get. And so I hate to be the one, and I know these guys will too, we'll beat this bandwagon, but we've got to raise funds. So that's one way, Terry, we've got to engage as well.
Dustin?
I just had a question to ask. Has there been any polling done on it yet? And if not, when might you run a poll?
Yes, we did do some polling last fall, and our initial polling is very good. We're very, very pleased with where we are in terms of polling. Most folks do equate agriculture as something that's very Oklahoman, and it has a very positive image across the state. But what the polling was in October and what it's going to be in November may be two totally different things, and I'll give you an example. Two other states have taken this effort on. One was North Dakota. They were the first to fight this fight. Missouri was the last, and now we're here in Oklahoma. In Missouri, HSUS and opponents of the state question dumped $1 million in the campaign 10 days before the election, and they moved the needle 10 points. Now, still passed in Missouri, but it passed by the narrowest of margins. While we have good polling today, obviously, if somebody comes in and dumps that kind of money, and if we don't have the resources to respond, we would see a similar outcome or a similar change in what polling is here. And so while Michael said it, I mean, we put together an original budget and estimate we need $1.5 to $2 million to defend agriculture in Oklahoma. And that's really what this is about, is defending agriculture for the future. It's not about giving us rights we don't already have. It's not about giving us something we can't do today, but it's about protecting it into the future. And so when you think about the importance of agriculture to our culture, to our way of life, I ask you, is that worth the kind of investment we're talking about? And we sure think it is. We've been working tirelessly at the Port Council. I know Michael has it at OCA. I know Terry and Steve and the folks at AFR are working as well. But, you know, when you start thinking about, he said no check's too small, and I'll give you some perspective. Just keep this in mind. 100 people that write a $100 check raises $10,000 very quickly. Now, anybody that wants to write a $10,000 check, we are happy to visit with you. But $100 may be more likely. But 100 of you that give us that donate $100 generates $10,000. And that goes a long way towards getting us where we need to be.
Okay. Any other of you want to respond? I have a question over at this mic. Melody?
Yes, I have two things. One is I think we need to have an aggressive campaign also to reach the non-ag, but the consumers that think, you know, that hear all this stuff about, you know, the farmers are just wanting a free ride for this, whatever, but how it actually affects them with the quality of their food, the quantity of their food, the price of their food. And so I think it's very important that we reach out to them, because I think that's a segment, a very large segment, actually larger than our agriculture segment, that we've got to get behind this, because there's more of them than there are of the ag producers. And so I think it's very important that we get an aggressive campaign to reach out to the consumers. And then the second thing, Terry, we talked about this at the LEAD program, but I think it's important that all of AFR hears this, about how I had asked you then if our counties and locals can contribute to this, because, you know, we can't contribute to certain types of funds, and there is a way for us to do that. So if you could share that with them so that they know that those funds can actually, that they can actually contribute and how they need to do that, then I think it's important for them to hear.
Okay, so I think I can answer those two questions. And you all may have to just take the microphone away from me, because you gave it to me and I may not give it up. First of all, we are working on a very aggressive campaign. One of the things we were able to do by getting this on the ballot in 2015, one of the things it did is it gave us time to organize a campaign. It gave us time to set a structure for how we wanted to raise money. It gave us time to come have meetings and discussions like this. If this didn't go on the ballot till May of 2016, we'd have been looking at less than six months to make it happen. But because we did it a year ago, we had time to kind of put our plan in place, start getting some things. So some of the places you can find us, OklahomaRightToFarm.com, we're on the web. You can find us, yes, on 777 on Twitter and on Facebook. So you can find some information there. And one of the ways you can help us, we saw this to be very successful in Missouri, is we've started with some little photos with the taglines on. I'm an Oklahoma farmer. Here's where we are. Take a picture of yourself out with your cattle. Take a picture of yourself out with your tractor, out in your farm, and send it in to Steve or to Terry or to Tommy. And let us, and give us permission to use it on our website. Give us permission to use it on Facebook. Those are the things that connect to consumers, the people that are on the farm doing it every day. So you can help us with that. Share the things that are there. Help us promote it. We went up with some new photos just last week, and we're able to see a dramatic increase in the number of likes we had almost immediately just from people sharing that photo. And they call that grassroots, because it literally is grassroots advocacy. The second question is, who can invest? And in a standard political campaign, I'm going to vote for Scott Biggs for office, I can't give a company check to Scott Biggs. You couldn't issue a county check or whatever directly to Scott. It'd have to come from the PAC. Because this is an issues question, we do not have that limitation here. So if your county organization chose to make a contribution, it certainly is acceptable under the ethics rules and bylaws to do that. There are no prohibitions against that. So we would encourage you, you know, unlike when we talk about as you were raising PAC money, I'm sure Terry and Steve and everybody told you those had to be individual checks. We'll take an individual check, we'll take a company check, you name it, you figure out how you want to get money to us, and we'll figure out how to take it, because it's really important to us, but those prohibitions against company donations don't exist in this campaign.
Okay, will you tell them who to make the check out to and where to send it, please?
Sure. There are envelopes right here at the door as you go out that have the address on it. And I apologize, I don't remember the address. But the checks can be made payable to Oklahoma Farmers Care.
There's also a box in the hallway and a table out there with brochures and bumper stickers and so on, and a box. And security has instructions to keep their eye on that box, so it's safe. Drop it in the box. In fact, I don't see the gentleman in here now, but there was a gentleman last night said, I'm going to put $20 and challenge every person here to put a $20 bill in it. Right now, 20 apiece would be probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $3,500 to $4,000. I think I've got Randy first, Joe, and then you.
Roy Lee was very kind by saying, Melody, make that check to Roy Lee Lindsay. So thanks, Roy Lee, for being a team player. We appreciate that. One of the things that scares us the most is some of our friends in the urban area, and the Facebook and the social media deals is huge. Some of my friends that live in the more urban areas say, why do we need this? What happens if we do nothing? So what's the downside of that? You know, I mean, we all kind of know maybe what could happen, but maybe if you'd share a little bit of what if we do nothing.
Yeah, that's a great question, Randy, and one that I think is, for us as an agriculture, is very, very important. There's no doubt, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, as Terry would say, but we all understand there is very aggressive agendas against agriculture, against our way of life, that they want to dictate how you do what you do. With no regard, really, for the animals themselves, as you'll see, the information that Representative Biggs shared on the House floor, very eloquently shared on the House floor, and then maybe perhaps today, about the amount of money they raise, and then yet the amount of money they send back to actual animal care. So these folks are just they're adversarial. They're not in the interest, certainly, of us in our business or even in agriculture. But one of the very important things that we have to remember is every 10 years in the United States of America, we do a census. And then based upon that census, we do a redistricting. What have we seen with legislative districts over time, both in the House and in the Senate? In the state, our Senate is the districts are population controlled, unlike the U.S. Senate. What have we seen with those districts? We've seen them move towards the urban areas. We've seen more House members now that are in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. We've seen more senators that are Oklahoma City and Tulsa. The average American, this is America, in Oklahoma it's probably a little less, but the average American is four generations removed from the farm. When I was a kid, the majority of the folks that I dealt with and when I was growing up in contemporaries and Rush Springs, if they weren't raised on a farm, a lot of them were, they at least had a grandmother or grandpa that was raised on the farm and still had it. And so they would go over for the summers, and they had an acquaintance with agriculture in that sense. We've got very good people in the legislature. Don't get me wrong. Good people in the legislature that have no concept of agriculture whatsoever. None. And it's, again, it's just by default. And so as we redistrict, we compound that problem. And so while I'm really confident in the legislature that we currently have in terms of what we in agriculture could do and protect currently, what about 20 years from now? What about 30 years from now, 40 years from now, when our grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, some of you, maybe great-great, depending on looking around and seeing a few of you, Terry.
Could be.
Well, yeah. What type of legislature will they be facing? You know, and working with legislators that are six generations removed from agriculture, extremely susceptible. No telling what these things will be able to do then in terms of messaging. So this is really a preservation of our ability to raise food and our ability to have a farming and ranching heritage, whether it's 20 acres or 20,000 acres. That's what the beauty of this question does. It protects all agriculture. Not just one particular sector or one particular segment. It protects all of agriculture. So I could get to preaching, Randy. You've got to ask a great question, but it's just vitally important that we preserve this ability, because we don't know what agriculture, or excuse me, what the legislature is going to look like long after we're gone.
Joe.
Well, I think he kind of answered my question. What I was going to ask is, my dad always told me, don't fight a battle you don't think you're going to win. Now, what happens if we don't win?
RJ says he has an answer, but it's not politically correct, so he wants me to give an answer. First of all, we're not entertaining the notion that we're not going to win. Okay? So we're working, and I would say tirelessly. I don't know that any of us really appreciated how big a task this was when we put it on the ballot. Maybe Scott did, because he's run for office before, but I had never run for office. I had never worked on a campaign like this. And I really didn't envision the amount of time that's involved. But we never considered for a minute at the Oklahoma Pork Council, when this was put on the ballot, that we weren't going to do everything in our power to make sure it passed. We have a tremendous amount of, I'm trying to think of the right word, influence, I guess, at the state capitol today as agriculture. When we work together on an issue, we can get a whole lot of stuff done. If we're not successful in this, then I think we're going to invite the groups that want to change agriculture in Oklahoma to be here year after year after year at our state legislature, to be here trying to greatly diminish what our influence is, trying to change agriculture long term, change the things that you do, the things you believe in. And so for us, we're just not entertaining the notion that we're not going to be successful. Now, we need your help to get there, everybody that's here. We need you to tell your friends. We need you to tell your neighbors. We need you to talk about it at church. We need you to talk about it at the grocery store. When you're standing at the grocery store picking up a dozen eggs, talk to folks about the difference in cage-free eggs and conventional eggs. Look at the price difference. The question was asked, Randy, you know, what do we tell our urban consumers? Well, you know, 1 in 4 kids in Oklahoma go to bed hungry every night. 1 in 6 Oklahomans has an insecurity of food, where their next meal is going to come from. Making agriculture more expensive, making food more expensive, while it may make me feel better about myself, that my pig had more room in her pen, whatever it may be, that doesn't help the mom, you know, the single mom that's the church secretary that's raising 2 kids. That doesn't help her put food on the table. So when you talk to your urban friends, talk to them about what food costs. Ask them to go to the grocery store. We saw in California, after the passage of Proposition 2, that did away with layer cages for hens and said, we're going to change how we raise hens and produce eggs in California. The egg industry said, great, we'll just go to Nevada and we'll sell you eggs from Nevada because it's too expensive. And the California legislature said, I don't like that idea. So we're going to pass a law that says every egg sold in California must comply with what our production standards are. And the price of eggs went up 75%. I was standing in the supermarket in Oklahoma City last week and looked at eggs. And conventionally produced eggs were $2.17 a dozen. Cage-free eggs were $2.97 a dozen. And organic cage-free eggs were $4.57 a dozen. Now, if you can afford $4.57 a dozen for eggs, and you feel good about buying organic cage-free eggs, great. If you want to pay $10 a pound for a pork chop or $30 a pound for beef tenderloin because it was raised a certain way, great. We'll find somebody that will produce it and feed it to you and sell it to you. But for that single mom, that single dad, that family that's working 2 jobs with 3 kids and trying to put one through college, $10 a pound pork chops isn't on their budget. $4.50 a dozen for eggs is not in their budget. And so we talk about this as choice. Our opponents are going to try to pitch this as big ag versus small ag. We would tell you it's about agriculture and it's about consumer choice. We don't want to limit your choices. We want you to be able to choose from conventionally raised eggs to organic eggs. Vote with your pocketbook. We'll figure out how to provide it for you. Our opponents want to tell you which eggs you should buy. And that's the fundamental difference in this piece. And that, I think, is a message, Randy, that you can sell back to your urban consumers.
Roy, I want to chip in on that price of eggs. I was speaking in Pontotoc County. I think I mentioned this to some of you yesterday in my speech. Pontotoc County And I mentioned the deal about the California eggs and the 75-76% increase. A lady came to me after the meeting, and I wish she would have interrupted me during it and let everybody know about it, so I've tried to tell them since. She said, I have a son living in California. I went to visit him last summer. I went to the grocery store for him, and I paid $8 a dozen for conventional eggs. Now, to our polling, somebody mentioned that a while ago. There's a difference in the way we need to present this to different crowds. To this crowd, it really chaps you when somebody tells you that you are abusing the way you treat your animals, because we know we're not. But guess what? Get in downtown Oklahoma City or Tulsa, and there's an awfully lot of people that kind of sympathize with these little puppy people. You know, they kind of want to identify and say, well, maybe they are mistreating their animals. But you talk to them about the price of food. Okay? Price of those mothers, talk to them about the price of food. Anything else, gentlemen? Got another question over here. Eldon?
Do you have any idea the amount of organizations and the amount of money behind those organizations that are going to be coming in from out of state to help protest and fight this question?
That's a good question. If you look at the fourth quarter report from the currently organized Vote No campaign, I think there's only 40,000 or something they've raised, which you think, whoa, hey, we're in good shape. Remember what Roy Lee told you about what happened in Missouri. 10 days before the vote, outside organizations dumped $1 million. Outside organizations don't have to report on quarterly reports if they choose to purchase an ad. If they do it through a PAC that's Oklahoma-based, they have to report that. But if HSUS just comes in and buys an ad, they don't have to report that to anybody. So our point is that we anticipate, and what Drew Edmondson has said, who's there's no secret what he's doing in terms of leading the Vote No effort. He's what he said, $2 million, $3 million is what they anticipate they need to raise. And coming from an organization who he works for, that their annual budget is $150 to $180 million, give or take, depending upon what the year is, you know, a $1 or $2 million check probably isn't too very difficult for them. So we anticipate a very well-funded, very well-organized, very attractive, consumer-attractive, if you will, campaign that will absolutely make you look terrible. It's what it'll do, and it'll make you mad. And it'll be 10 days before the campaign, before the vote, and if you wait to get motivated by then, it's too late, which is what we're trying to do, is to motivate you now.
One more quick question.
Well, just to comment to that fact about the egg deal, if you don't think that it's already here, listen to the new McDonald's commercials, because they're promoting cage-free eggs.
Yeah.
So that's a subtle way of getting to where they want to be. So you know, I mean, we're already looking at that. So thank you, gentlemen, for what you're doing.
Thank you, Randy. We would, you know, when I said earlier about choice, and I said if the marketplace will pay for something, we'll figure out how to produce it. We've done that in agriculture for as long as we've been around. So if McDonald's wants to sell cage-free eggs, somebody will figure out how to produce cage-free eggs for McDonald's. We believe that's the way the market should work. Let the marketplace drive those pieces, not let the government come tell us that all eggs ought to be cage-free. And that's what happened in California, and I think that's where we're trying to get to.
Did you all hear that question?
Yeah,
can farmers and ranchers do anything they want to, even if it's bad, on their own land? And the legislature can't do anything about it.
I think we give a lot of credit to Scott. When he crafted the state question, he included language that addressed a compelling state interest, and it allowed the legislature to still act in areas that were of a compelling state interest. And if you can tell me what's a more compelling state interest than clean water, I'd like to hear it. Because it's my belief fundamentally that we built a protection in. North Dakota didn't have compelling state interest language in it. Missouri didn't have compelling state interest language. But Representative Biggs saw that there would be questions about pollution, about how we take care of the environment, and he built in my opinion, a great protection for the state that will still allow the legislature to act in what would be a compelling state interest. So, no, you're not going to be allowed. Contrary to what Drew's told us, Contrary to what he said publicly, you're not going to be able to dump your oil in the creek. I mean, we're not going to undo. We grandfathered in all the existing environmental protection regulations that were already in place. This has no impact on federal regulations that protect clean water. This is all about protecting Oklahoma and limiting Oklahoma regulatory efforts going forward, but nothing as it relates to environment or clean water or any of those things.
Yes, go ahead, Michael.
Hearty amen to what Roy Lee said. Tommy, I appreciate you asking that question because that's a question that's very viable. Plus, and this is where, forgive me for a minute, but I'm going to have a little righteous rage on this. But I think it's pretty dadgum insulting when a guy would stand up and say, if this passes, then you farmers are going to do anything you want to destroy the environment. He is questioning our integrity when he does that. Because I look out here and I see some folks who have labored really hard to make it better than what you received it, to pass it on better. And for someone to sit up here and say, we as agriculture are passing this so that we can do anything we want and be willy-nilly is just downright insulting. And so that motivates me to get involved and to move forward, because I know folks like you guys are doing everything you can to preserve and to give that small, big ranch farming operation to your grandchildren better than what you found it. No matter whether this question was ever here or not, this just gives you an opportunity to make sure you get it done.
Let me make a closing comment before I turn it over to Representative Biggs. Do most of us in this age group have to worry about our Oklahoma legislature passing something stupid like California has done? I don't think so, because there weren't but just a handful, seven, eight, or just a few people that were against putting it on a ballot. And Right to Farm was already working on them. It says Right to Harm, not Right to Farm. And they're going to come with all kinds of things like that that's going to sound pretty darn cute. And you've got to be prepared. And in your packet is a three-page document. AFR supports 777, and inside there are questions and answers, what it will do, what it won't do, and you need to look at that. I'm not concerned about me. Do you know what I am concerned about? My grandkids. You need to too, folks. You know what? When I take calves off wheat pasture, if one of them bloated and died, we drag him off to the corner somewhere and let the coyotes have him. It's just another calf that's gone. We just have to absorb that. It's worth at least one of those steers going up on that truck after wheat pasture. The value of it, it's worth at least one of those to ensure that my grandkids don't have to worry about this. There's a check for $1,000 for the price of a steer, and I challenge anybody in here to think along those same lines. I've already challenged our board of directors. I challenge a match, and it doesn't have to be that much, any part of it. Are we a real strong farm organization, or are we a paper tiger? We're going to put our money where our mouth is. We're going to defeat this giant. Now's the time. Representative Biggs.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dietrich. I was kind of a late addition to this panel, and I appreciate the opportunity to sneak me in here and the opportunity to address you, mainly because of some events that took place this week at the Oklahoma Capitol. I don't need to talk to this room and talk to you about struggles. You know, you struggle with rain, you struggle with the price of inputs, price of commodities, the roller coaster that is the beef industry, not pork. You guys are doing pretty good, I think. It's a struggle at the Capitol, some days more so than others. But would you believe this year at the Oklahoma Capitol, agriculture is under attack yet again? Just a show of hands, because I need to motivate some people a little bit. How many people in here have an agricultural sales tax exemption card for use on your farm? pretty much everybody. Would you believe the city of Tulsa, an organization called Oklahoma Municipal League, has asked that the state capitol do away with that agricultural sales tax exemption as a way to help balance the budget? Yeah. Agriculture is under attack. Would you believe yesterday, February 19th, I was in Cushing working on a legislative issue until late at night, and I apologize. I didn't get to apologize to the lobbyists that gave me their cell phone numbers because I learned late last night that the Oklahoma Municipal League held a water conference yesterday in Tulsa, in Oklahoma City, in which Tulsa and Municipal League organized a vote no with all the city managers, telling them how the right to farm is going to allow farmers to steal water from cities, is going to triple the nitrates and make the water undrinkable, and the cities like the city of Hennessy, the city of Chickasha, the city of Verdon will dry up because there's no water. Agriculture is under attack. This week at the Capitol, two representatives, Representative Brian Reniger, a veterinarian from McAllister, on the other side of the aisle from me, but an equal friend and colleague, and myself received threat letters and demand letters and bullying letters from Humane Society of the United States and from Drew Edmondson for exposing some of the truth and some of the facts about those organizations there in the Capitol. We have a bill this year that prohibits animal rights activists or those type groups like that from fundraising on the backs of Oklahomans and taking that money out of state. They were embarrassed when we in committee were able to identify the exact amount of money they fundraised in Oklahoma, how they used the devastating Moore tornado just north of here in 2013 as an example for how they fundraise on the backs of Oklahomans. Because of that, former Attorney General, former Governor candidate Drew Edmondson accused two of us of lying in committees, impugning the dignity of the House, and it was below us, and he was embarrassed by what happened. And the simple fact was we were granted a very rare opportunity yesterday, or on Thursday, to address the entire House body and state the facts. The facts is this. HSUS was afraid and upset the numbers presented in committee. In committees, we stated they raised over $1 million and spent $100,000 of it. And they raised some of that money on the backs of the Moore tornado. They sent a letter threatening lawsuits for libel, slander, defamation if we did not issue a written apology by yesterday at 5. That did not happen. Because the numbers are this. They raised $1.7 million over a time period here in Oklahoma. They did that fundraising, part of that on the backs of Oklahomans and the Moore tornado. We have an email that starts off talking about the Moore tornado. I have an email from the president of HSUS board who admits they had a disaster banner link on their website that raised some funds from that as well. They spent $110,000 here in Oklahoma. So we said $1,100,000. They actually raised $1.7 and spent $110,000. And they accused us of lying. Because of that, the entire House of Representatives stood up, told Drew Edmondson, told HSUS that the State House would not be bullied, would not be intimidated, would not be threatened when it comes to the pursuit of legislation that protects you, protects your kids, protects your grandkids from these out-of-state activists that seek to do us harm.
I don't know, but we can sure tell you, make them out to Oklahoma Farmers Care. And there's an envelope out there you put your name on and drop it in that box.
Mr. President, your cash is big from my wheat pasture. My cash is little and eating acres from my check.
Give me 50 bucks. 500?
There's going to be a good acre crop this year.
Is that a promise? Or is that,
yeah.
You just gave me one of your little calves. Okay. Well, folks, you get the point. Scott, were you through?
Oh, wait. You know, it's only fitting that we have Ms. Gerken start this whole conversation off. You know, FFA, she's the future. Our kids are the future. Our grandkids are the future. If you think back to FFA, one of the first things you learn about in eighth grade, at least it was for me, was you had to memorize the FFA creed. And everybody in this room at least one point knew what that was. I had to look it up. I forgot the last part. But it talks about struggles. It talks about the future of agriculture. It calls on past generations to provide for our future. And that's exactly what 777 does. It doesn't do anything for us the day after it passes, but it provides protections for my children, my grandchildren, all of your families moving forward, and that's what's important. So, thank you for your time.
All right. We're just about to finish up this up. Folks, let's raise some money. Let's go on record with American farmers and ranchers. Supporting State Question 777, not just that question, but your grandkids.